Cooper Allen.
What's up, brother?
How you doing, man?
Doing good. Happy to be here.
Thanks for having us. We're in your space right now. You've taken this over. How long have you been set up here preparing for the tour and preparing for your upcoming headlining show at the Ryman?
We started rehearsing on Monday. Boys have been hard at work. Pretty awesome space to be able to use, too. So we got, the set's going to be awesome. We got a little show up in New York this weekend to kind of warm up for the Ryman, then the big one next week.
So your team said the show in New York this weekend was scheduled specifically to warm up because you haven't really played a show this year yet, or maybe you have.
We've done a few one-offs, but this will be the first like new set. I got to make sure I'm playing the piano on a few songs so like that I don't suck at that. So it'll be nice. We played this venue a couple times. Good people up there.
So you really feel like maybe the warm-up's not needed. I'm sure you'd crush it at the Ryman, but that's actually gonna help you feel a little more comfortable for the Ryman show, you think?
Yeah. I gotta see if some of this new stuff works. But yeah, it'll be fun, man.
So you've come off the road. You had a kid.
Yeah.
So you've been in dad mode, and you're putting this new tour together. How much work? What has to happen? How much work goes into this new set?
Dude, I've got a lot of really good dudes around me. So it really, for me, is not that hard. They make my life really easy out here. Production manager, tour manager, all the band, they do their thing, and they all have this like standard of excellence that they work to. And so I just kind of get to show up and, I help put together the set list and all that stuff, but my part's easy and all of that. Just try to focus on writing songs that people want to come to the venues and hear.
Okay. But you put the set list together.
Yeah.
And you give it to your team. And I'm sure there's going to be like interludes and production and stuff like that. So they come up with all that. And
we kind of workshop it together.
You workshop it together.
Yeah.
So how's it work? What's your intro going to be? You got a new intro this year?
Well, I can't tell you the intro.
Don't tell me the intro, but how do you come up with it? You sit around and you go, what should I come out to? How do I make this awesome? Is that how it works?
Yeah. So we've been doing Jump Around for the past couple of years. It's like our intro song. So that's still going to be in the pre-show role. Intro track is going to be something off the record that like, it's not really possible to play live, but we'll just kind of blast that. Lights come up, first song, and just kind of run it from there.
How important is an intro to your show? Isn't the intro, I pay such close attention to artists' intros in concerts. Doesn't that set the whole tone for the entire night, the intro?
The intro matters, man.
It's really important, right?
And it doesn't have to be insane.
You
can do an insane intro if you want. That's awesome. But you can, like, there's a lot of ways to do an intro. And a good intro, that gets me hyped.
So if I was you, I would be in the shower every day picturing intros. And like I'd be driving to work thinking about how am I going to come out on stage at the Ryman and make it awesome? Like,
yeah.
Is that how you come up with an intro? How do you create an intro for the show?
Kind of something that like gets people hyped, but also maybe like shocks them a little bit. Not in a bad way, like a good shock. I've always wanted to be like the Demon Deacon riding out on the motorcycle. Yeah, I grew up with that stuff. Not going to do that, but maybe
Why
one
not?
Day.
You could do that.
Do you have a motorcycle?
No, but you could get a motorcycle. You're a big deal. Come on.
I think I can ride a motorcycle. It'd be one of those like tricycle motorcycles.
Or one of those fake ones that just slides out on like a little prop roller thing.
Yeah. That'd
big,
be awesome.
Big
at the
smoke.
Ryman.
Yeah. Okay, so you come up with the intro. Your team helps put together the tracks and everything that goes involved, and then you're here all week, basically,
mm-hmm.
with your band.
Yep.
Work, practicing the songs, getting the set to feel right. And you move things around, right? What happens? What do you have to work on with everyone?
Transitions are big, like song to song. Obviously, you put some like cool things that, are maybe not on the record that you can do in the song, extended, instrumentals or like intro, hit, all that stuff. You kind of workshop the song. Some you play as is, but it's the transitions and just making sure like everything flows. That's kind of the important part.
Do you like to rehearse or is this painful? Would you rather just get this over with and be out on the road playing shows?
I would obviously rather be out on the road, but rehearsing, it's kind of fun. It's fun seeing the whole thing come together. And just like watching these guys do their thing is just like as a fan of music.
Yeah.
It's just really cool to like watch these guys like do their art.
Yes.
Outside of just what you see on stage. Because there's a lot that goes into it on their side.
Yes. You were the guy who came up kind of through TikTok. And I feel like early on in your career, I think it's safe to say that I think people underestimated you or maybe didn't understand the how serious your career was. And now that you're playing the Ryman, I think that narrative has already shifted. But do you feel like now that's just totally a bygone, that narrative or that idea that, oh, this is just a TikTok thing? And I know that's kind of a dated idea, but I think that you were the guy that people underestimated how serious your career was and became.
I think it all started when I won my first Zach Kuhn Award in November of this past year.
That's right.
Some would attribute it to that.
Yes. The record books will say so.
Yeah.
Yes.
Official or unofficial.
I believe so.
But, dude, I think we've just kind of hung around long enough and grown. You know, I wouldn't say we've, like, done that, but we have slow grown over the past, like, 5 years and had staying power to where, you know, it's just felt more and more real as the years have gone on. And also just as more things have come off of TikTok. I mean, most hit songs are like TikTok things because that's just like the best way to reach people. So as it's become more normal, and then doing things like doing the Ryman and international tours and continuing to sell tickets and all that stuff. But at the same time, I've never felt like slighted by anybody here or like I never thought the industry was just against me. Just because maybe they didn't understand what we were doing. So everybody's always been pretty cool. And stuff like the Ryman helps, I think, more people kind of jump on board.
Do you feel that, though? I almost think it's easy to feel like, maybe it's not malicious, or maybe you didn't feel this way, but I almost feel like it's easy to be like, well, you know, I don't know what. We're not getting that radio thing early on in your career. And it's like, I feel like you could be like, maybe people are against me.
Yeah, but like, they weren't. Because, like, I would interact with a lot of these people
in the industry.
They always thought what we were doing was cool. And, like, publishers would always hook me up with some of their writers to write with. Like, the writing community was always really cool with it. You know, my management has helped that a lot and kind of spreading the word and getting, you know, good vibes around the industry with it. It just, even though we've never had, like, a number one on radio or anything, it just has never really felt... it's never felt like it was like me against the world, I guess. Because I also have some awareness and know that like I do a lot of crazy stuff. And so, when you choose to do some off the wall stuff, then, you know, you can't like be mad when people don't like immediately understand it.
Don't you have to think it's you against the world though, or you and your team against the world?
You have to work like that.
You have to work like that, right?
Yeah.
And then... Yes, right? So you do have to think like that a little bit, right?
Yeah, it's more like, we have the tools. I got to, like, work as hard as I can to make it happen and not expect somebody to make it happen for us, I guess. It's more of like I don't think we're entitled to anybody, like, coming in and poof, making something happen.
So, I disagree. Like I think you should be entitled to that.
Well, because you should call around
because you've got it going on. So, but what if the right? Are you looking to expand elements of your team, say a label or anything like that? Would you say if the right deal came along, you'd be interested, or is the idea that we're keeping this internal and that's the best route to take?
Yeah, I think when that moment comes where it's the right deal and it feels right, you know, in my gut and all of our guts, then it'll be the right moment and we'll take that step. It just hadn't felt right yet. It could feel right in a month. It could feel right in a year, or it could never feel right. I don't know. But it's definitely something we're all like open to for sure.
What do you think is the thing? Because I can't think of a single artist in kind of the Music Row Nashville ecosystem that has played the Ryman, headlining, sold out, and doesn't have a label deal. So what do you think it is that you've been able to accomplish without that? And maybe those two things are not connected at all. Maybe it's just unrelated parallels. But it's just interesting. What is the thing you think that has helped you get there without the support of a big label system?
It's obviously like the TikTok stuff and the social media in general, just reaching people, staying active on it, posting on it like every day for the past however many years, always having my fans involved in decisions I make, like releasing songs and all that stuff. So it's that combined with just hitting the road hard and doing kind of the hard ticket thing from the moment, you know, me, Thomas, and AK started touring together. We wanted to go play for our people, and we wanted to go play whether it was 100 people or 500 people, and we just kind of built our audience into this really cool, like, community. And so I think it's been that connection with fans, like, outside of just social media, where we have kind of road warriored it, as well as all the social media stuff that has kind of, I don't know, just kept a lot of really loyal fans and helped grow because we love playing shows, love meeting people.
How do you keep loyal fans, though? Because a lot of people tour really hard and they never get anywhere and they keep playing clubs and it doesn't grow. So you tour and you just said, you know, we have these loyal fans. We've built this amazing community. How do you do that when you're on the road?
You got to put a lot of thought into the show. And not that I think everybody puts a lot of thought into their show, but like that's just been how I was wired since I started doing it in high school. Like performing live was always my favorite thing. And I always wrote songs. I always put out CDs. And I always thought first, what's going to make these people have the best time? And if it's me not playing any of my songs, it's just these people having the best time, then we're going to do that. And so I think that mindset of like, how do we keep these people entertained the whole time, keep them wanting to come back and just trying everything. I mean, as goofy as you can think, we've tried it at a show. And I think people have just liked it and just kind of seen our shows as this like big party.
What are the things, because I've seen you do CMA Fest a couple times at the Riverfront, and then you did one of the stages in that middle park, mm-hmm. and your sets are so entertaining, and you're right, you do have these things that just make it, your sets stand out and just special, but what do you think about internally, the stuff that seems so natural, and like, oh, he's doing this, now he's doing this, that flows, but like, you must think a lot about how to structure this stuff, so what are the things that you think about that make the set really engaging and really interesting?
It's a lot of like crowd interaction. Like forever, we're not gonna have time to do it at the Ryman.
Why not? You're headlining the Ryman. What do you not have time for at the Ryman?
We do this like big on the spot mashup at the end.
Okay.
And we just don't have time with this set, or we would be up there for like
2 hours.
Because
there's a curfew. Why? Who's pushing off the stage at the Ryman?
Me.
You.
can't keep these guys up here for 2 hours.
Yes, you can. What are you talking about? I'm here to tell you you can. Okay, so you don't have time to do with this at the Ryman, apparently, but
they're a little, we sprinkle it, you know, in there a bunch. And just like from that to we do like the can't dance competition where we try to get people like dancing and they chug beers at the end. And then I do this like moment where it's just me and the crowd in the middle of the show where I play some of my stuff, but also go into some like cool covers and have them sing along. I just have always liked like it feeling more like a, no matter how big the place is, just feeling like a college bar that I loved playing at so much, where you're just like looking right at these people and maybe they're making requests or maybe they're like talking to you in between songs. Like, I like that feeling.
How are you going to shrink the Ryman into a college bar? How are you going to do it? Are you going to say from the stage, hey, everyone, let's pretend we're in a college bar right now? Or what do you do? How do you make the Ryman feel intimate?
Alcohol helps
okay.
The attendees, for sure.
So you're going to tell everybody, go to the stands and get something to drink.
Yes.
Before this starts.
Of course.
You're going to need it.
Yeah, well, Thomas Mack is opening the show. He's going to get them all drinking, as he always does.
You love Thomas Mack. Is Thomas Mack your best friend?
He is absolutely one of my best friends.
What do you guys talk about? When you're hanging out with Thomas Mack, is it just ridiculous?
Dude, it's like those videos we do together.
Yeah, like
that's
Lady
like
Gaga.
Exactly, it's exactly like, how it is.
It's that.
Yeah, he's the funniest person ever. He's also like the best human ever and just has the best heart. We talk about serious stuff. We talk about, you know, music stuff we're going through, life stuff, family stuff. And then just, I mean, I feel like I'm laughing the whole time at the same time.
Does he come to you for advice ever? And does he say, how do I get to the Ryman? Or how do I headline the Ryman?
Well, I think we both help each other out a lot. Because there's a lot of things he does that I don't even think about, and there's probably stuff that I do that he doesn't think about. So it's like, it's a cool thing about Nashville and about country music is you just have a ton of people helping each other.
I love the two of you guys together. You guys are hilarious. I would watch a show of you two just going around doing stupid things.
I'm like the sidekick in that thing for sure. Like he's just hilarious. He's the funniest person I've ever met.
So is he going to open an acoustic or full band?
Full band.
Full band.
Yep.
And then is he going to come out and do a song with you in the middle of the set?
Yeah, we'll do it at the end.
We'll do it at the end.
Yeah.
So you guys stick around to catch that.
Yeah.
Are you going to have any surprise guests come out? Don't tell me who, but, well, maybe tell me who.
We're working on it.
You're working on it.
Yeah.
You should have some big guests come out.
Do you know anybody?
Yes. Come on.
Make some calls.
But what is the prep that goes into the Ryman? This is what I'm trying to figure out. Like, what is the prep that goes into the Ryman than another show? But the Ryman, it's like kind of a thing. It's like maybe we should have some guests come out or something. It's like there's a little prep you got to do, right?
Yeah, it's definitely, it is an extra special show. But you kind of got to treat it a little bit just like a normal show.
That's how you do it, right?
Yeah. Well, it's like a big basketball game. That's what all the coaches say. It's just another game. Sure, it's, you know, when Carolina plays Duke, but you got to treat it in preparation like another game.
But this is what I'm curious about, that I'm curious if you feel this way or maybe not. I feel like the Ryman Show is like this opportunity to say to any last people who have not gotten on the Cooper Allen train, it's like your way to say to the industry, like, we're here and this train's leaving. Get on board. Do you have that kind of feeling inside of you, or you really don't? You're probably going to say you don't, but I'm curious about this.
I think everybody does.
Everybody
naturally.
Does, right? Yes.
I think you're, I mean, lying if you say you don't. But at the same time, we've just been so focused on our train for so long and what's going on in this train. It just, like, the more energy you put into what can I do, you know, what can we do, you know, that's when you're going to really make inroads. When you start worrying about what everybody else thinks, it's just wasted energy, in my opinion.
I think about what everybody thinks. That's what I think
about.
We
all do.
Every day. That, exactly. So what is your team right now? It's your management company and your agent.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the whole team? Do you have a publisher?
A publisher.
Publisher?
Missy Roberts over at Universal has been incredible.
So you've got everything except the label.
Yes, I have a wonderful PR team, of course.
An incredible PR team.
Yep.
Is the label over? I don't want to say it's overrated, but I'm just trying to figure out, do you feel like the next step will be a label or not necessarily?
Yeah, that probably is the next step.
You think so?
I think. Well, because country radio still is awesome, and it matters a whole lot. And, you know, it's my goal to be on country radio one day. So you do kind of, I feel like, unless you don't, but I kind of feel like you do need some sort of label partnership at some point.
Do you talk to people like Drew Baldridge, though, who got his first number one without radio?
Yeah, what a beast.
What a beast, right?
Yeah.
And if I was you, I'd be so inspired by that. I'm sure you are. Does that make you go, maybe we don't need a label, maybe we could just do it ourselves?
It does, sometimes for sure. It'll just have to be the right song in the right moment with, like, the right numbers behind it to be like, okay, let's, you know, spend whatever the amount is to try to take this to radio.
Yeah.
So that definitely has crossed my mind, and I think what Drew has done is unbelievable, man, and nobody deserves it more. And that song is so good, as is all his stuff.
So do you talk to Drew ever?
I do, yeah.
And you say, what do you say? You say, how can I do this? Is this something I could maybe do? Like, and is that what you talked to him about? How to do a label independently, or how to bring a song to radio independently?
Yeah.
You talk about everything.
Well, I just kind of, I'm sure as everybody in town has been so enamored by that whole thing, like, just asked his process. And when you hear about, you know, how hard he worked, it's like, oh my gosh, this is, you respect it even more than you thought you ever could. Because, I mean, he was calling a lot of these places. He was hiring out his own radio team. It was.
You could do that, though, don't you think?
Well, I think so, maybe.
Yes, if anyone can do it, it's you. Come on.
Well, no, if anybody can do it, it's Drew. But no, he's paved the way.
Next. He's paved the way. Okay. Your song, I was listening to your song, Work, as I was coming in. That's got that great little catchy, like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And then you kind of, at one point in that song, you do these, like, la-la-las.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, that kind of sounds Beatles-inspired to me.
Yeah.
Are you a fan of the Beatles?
I am way more Rolling Stones than Beatles.
You're a Rolling Stones guy than Beatles.
If I had, I feel like it's usually not one or the other, but I prefer the Stones.
But does that line, is that sort of a Beatles thing, do you think? That part in that song? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. That was, we were sitting there, and that was really Sam and Noah Forbes, the other guy that we wrote it with. They kind of came up with that whole instrumental section with, like, the kind of weird chords, because it is different there. And I was just, like, sitting there watching these two just incredible musicians just come up with something that I never would have thought of. It was awesome.
They came up with that. How, you need like a Rolling Stones song or something, right?
Dude, there's nothing better than
the Stones. Why do you love the Stones? One of my favorite bands, the Stones.
It's just, they did it for such a long time, and it was always so good. And they always evolved, but never like lost what made the Stones the Stones. You know, like it was still just the open G kind of blues guitar riffs that just like are timeless.
What are Cooper Allen's top five Rolling Stone songs?
Wow. Tumbling Dice is my favorite.
Off Exile and Main Street.
Yeah.
Right? Am I crazy? No. That's
I think
right.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That one, I love Shine a Light.
Also Off Exile.
Yep. Can't You Hear Me Knocking's great. And golly, this is so hard. Wild Horses is phenomenal. And Let's Spend the Night Together.
Oh my God.
That's the coolest groove, the coolest like part.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So how much do you look at videos of Mick Jagger and you go, I should strut the stage like that guy? Is he an inspiration as a front man?
His energy, 100%.
Really?
Yeah. I can never, like, if I strut like that, I mean, look at me.
Yeah.
I can't do that. But
yeah.
He's one of the best ever, and he still can sing while doing it, and he can do it while he's, like, what, 80 years old
or something? He's 82 years old.
It's crazy.
But you have such, a signature energy on stage. You walk around, you got tons of energy. Is Mick Jagger really a guy that you look at and you go, how do I get that kind of energy on stage? And who else? Like, who are the other front men that you're, like, that you're looking at and inspired by?
Dude, Kid Rock was the show I saw before I started my band in eighth grade. So him on stage, I was like, that is awesome. Kenny Chesney, always like put on one of the best shows. And golly, growing up, I went to see Van Halen, and like David Lee Roth was back with him. So like watching guys like him, like all the old rock guys. I just love people that like just go crazy on stage and run around, and I don't know. I feel like half the time I look like an idiot, but like I'm having so much fun looking like an idiot. It's awesome. So that makes it like kind of cool.
That's the best part, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen the Stones?
I have. I saw them in Raleigh at Carter Finley, and the Avett Brothers opened up. It was when I was in college, and it was sick.
What would you ask Mick Jagger if you had the opportunity to?
Ooh. I would want his workout, how does he move around? Because he moves around like 10 times more than I do and still has like the lung capacity, while he's also probably like smoked a bunch of cigs his whole life. Like how does that all come
you want
together?
The health workout, the health routine.
Yeah, I need his workout.
You're a pretty forward, like health forward guy though, right? How much time you spend in the gym? You look jacked, man. Are you in the gym all the time?
Tight shirts do wonders.
How much time do you have to spend in the gym to look like Cooper Allen?
I go for like an hour a day.
Every single day you go to the gym.
Nothing crazy. I try to.
And what do you do in the gym?
Do a lot of elliptical.
No, really?
Yeah.
What do you mean? You're on the elliptical all the time?
Yeah, with all the other old folks.
You got big arms, though. How do you get big arms?
I lift like two or three times a week, probably.
That's all it takes?
Yeah. I've been doing the same arm workout for like since college. It is nothing crazy.
You don't feel like you have to switch up the workout in order to like, I don't know what. You feel like,
I probably should switch up the workout.
Since what's the arm workout or what is it? People want to know this kind of thing and they want to do it themselves so they can look like you. What is the arm workout?
I did 2 days, like a chest tries day and then a back bicep shoulder day. I still like bench press, incline press, whatever, the tricep.
This is simple stuff. You're not doing anything nobody else isn't doing.
No, this is like basic, like what you would see on the machines that show you like the diagrams.
That's all it takes to get in shape.
It's consistency, bro.
Consistency.
And eating right.
And eating right. Are you a healthy guy?
I try to be.
So when you're out on the road and you're in the middle of at a gas station or something, do you eat like a gas station burger or is your body a temple? Like you can't put anything bad into it.
Gas station burger is a bold move
for
any kind of body.
Yeah.
I usually try to, especially on the road, eat pretty clean. And it actually is pretty, it's possible.
It's hard though, isn't it? You come off a stage and all you want to do at the end of the night is have like a big like McDonald's burger or something.
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
Be awesome, right?
But you know, you just go for like the the perfect bar instead or something.
That's
just be like, I don't know. I'm not going to feel good if I eat this 20 chicken wings right now.
That's right. That's right.
But there are certain nights where you just full send it for sure.
You say, come on, I'm a big deal. I can do whatever I want.
Or you just drink a few too many Coors Lights on stage and the wings are right there. What are you going to do?
Can you drink on stage? You drink on
stage?
A little bit. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, nothing crazy.
Nothing crazy. You're not a crazy guy.
No, I'm pretty calm.
You're pretty calm. You're a dad.
I'm a father. Thank you.
You're a dad now, dude.
Yes.
And is your daughter going to be at the show?
She is.
She's going to be at the show.
Yep.
And she's not going to remember it, right?
I'd be shocked. But we'll get a really cool picture.
We'll get a great photo. Yeah. How incredible is this? Okay, so you've got your daughter. She could stay up, or are you going to put her to bed before the show?
So she's like 3 months. So she can still stay up pretty late. It's kind of like when we want to put her down, there's stuff you do and she kind of goes down. But if you want to keep her up, you can kind of keep her up. But she usually stays up till like 10 or 11 anyways.
Yeah. How is this? Is this going to affect your career having a kid? Are you slowing down now? Or do you have to say, I can't slow down?
Well, you got something to fight for.
So now you have to speed up.
Yeah. Or especially like, you know, and my wife, who is so awesome and supportive in all this, we talked about this before we kind of started thinking about having a kid. I was like, well, this is what we do. And she's like, I don't want you to slow down at all. I know this is your dream and this is so important to you. And of course, you know, family is a much bigger dream to me than just a career. So if for some reason I had to choose family, you know, 11 out of 10 times. But she was really cool and was like, you got to keep doing what you love.
That's the inspiring, right?
Yeah.
That's what you need to show your daughter, that you can do what you love and still have a family, right?
Exactly. Well, we gotta work hard to try to get a second bus so the family can come on the bus and have a bunch of little rugrats running around. That's like the dream.
What else are you going to add to? Is the band going to expand ever? Do you have visions of like a steel player or a fiddle player or maybe one day. You got dialed in though, right?
We're rocking really good right now with
these
guys.
Led Zeppelin. You got like a quartet thing going and it's like four of you and that's all you need.
Well, and it's, my guys are so good. Yeah,
they're good, right?
Yeah. I could see us adding like one more at some point, just like somebody that can actually play the piano unlike me.
Yeah, yeah,
And like an aux guy, but I love my squad.
All right. Cooper Allen's headlining the Ryman. May have already happened by the time you watch this, because that's how the internet works. But it's unbelievable. The new album, Winston-Salem, is not so new anymore. It's been out for a couple months. But it's 20 songs. You didn't think about doing two albums individually. You said, we're going to do two albums.
Yeah.
One side's going to be serious. The other side, we're going to cut loose a little bit. You really cut loose on that second side.
It was about as loose as you can cut it.
Did you go, this is too much? Or you said, that's the point.
That's the point.
That's the point. It's got to cut loose, right?
Yeah, that was the going outside the lines.
Okay, so you're independent. If you were at a label, you think they would have said, it's too loose. You got wrangled. You got to dial this back.
Maybe.
You think so?
But also, I think, you know, guys like Hardy, Jelly Roll, so many artists.
A lot of music.
Well, and they're doing exactly what they want to do. And they're doing different genres and blending stuff. So I think, like, people like that have really, I don't know, made that a lot more, palatable for the industry.
How many songs didn't make the album? How many songs did you have that didn't make the 20?
Yeah, probably another 10, 20.
Okay. So not a ton of excess. You're polishing these songs to get them right.
Yeah.
That's how you do it, right?
Yeah. Definitely like a bunch that weren't even in consideration that I wrote, just because, you know, some songs you write just aren't good and it's not the writer's fault. It's usually my fault if that happens. But yeah.
How good has your songwriting gotten, do you think? Or do you think do you feel like you've become a much better songwriter over the past couple of years?
I think I've gotten a lot better.
From writing with other people?
Yeah.
That's how you become a great writer, right?
I think part of writing as an artist is, you know, what you want to say. You definitely help the room. And you obviously can contribute as much as you want to contribute. But sometimes I just sit there and I'm like, golly, these guys that I'm writing with are so good.
Unbelievable, right?
And maybe sometimes my job is to sit back a little bit and just, like, let them do their stuff. Sometimes my job is to be more active and, you know, offer more things up. It just kind of depends on the room.
What's your biggest song that when you play it live, It's like your what gets the biggest reaction every night?
Played the fifth.
I played the fifth.
It's our closer.
That's the closer.
Yeah.
That's a great song.
Thank you. It was a great melody that I did not write. So
when you had that though, did you go, we can't put this out, this is too nutty? Or you said that we have to put this out?
Oh, I thought no way it would work. And I don't know why I didn't think it would work for some reason, but then it worked in a really, really big way.
All right, but hang on. So you're in the writer's room and somebody has that melody for I Plead. What is someone, how's someone come up with that? Someone.
So it was Matt McKinney, Justin Morgan. Matt said, I had this title called Plead the Fifth. Great title. We started messing around with it. And I think like I started putting it to that Auld Lang Syne melody. And then I was like, can we do that? Is that like legal? And it was, because public domain. And then just wrote an insane story in the verses. And it all just kind of came together. Those are the two of my favorite dudes right there.
But who came up with the melody? How's the melody? I guess that's that classic melody,
yeah.
Right?
Should all acquaintance be forgotten, never brought to mind?
What is that? I shouldn't.
Auld Lang Syne.
What is that? It's like an old thing.
It's an old. I think Robert Burns was the guy who wrote it, but it's like
big Robert Burns guy.
Love Robert Burns.
Big Robert Burns guy.
Yeah, I love Scottish Irish music. That's a Scottish song, but that's like.
Like you like the idea of it, or do you go out and listen to Scottish music? Like traditional Scottish music, Irish music, you listen to that?
I will put on like a Irish Scottish pub rock playlist. Like
really?
More often than you would probably think.
And more like Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, is that that genre or no? That's a different thing.
I might not even be familiar enough to even speak about that.
You don't even want to comment to offend the community.
Yeah, so, but like okay. Flogging Molly but and so Dropkick Murphys.
This kind of energy is in your head. So you're like, we should write a song like this, and then you take that melody and you go, oh my God, that's a, I Plead the Fifth, blah, 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 blah. That's a great song, right?
Yeah.
You got to do that again, right? Are there any other melodies like that that are classic?
There are. And you got to, it's weird. It's like, there's plenty of stuff like that to do, but like, it's always walking a very fine line of like, is this cool or is it really not cool? I've crossed into the not cool many times with the classic melodies, but Plead the Fifth was actually really cool.
You're a cool guy, man. You can't cross into the uncool that often.
You'd be surprised.
No, stop it. Stop it.
I'm a father now. I automatically get uncool.
That's true. That's real. You teased some new song the other day, too. What's this new song that you teased the other day?
Which one?
There was one that was like really fast chorus and
kind
had like a distorted
ish a little bit
had like a distorted vocal.
Yeah,
what was that one? That was hilarious.
It's called Idea.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah,
is that going to come out?
I hope so.
That's a great, that I watched that three times. I was like, this is unbelievable.
It is. Like, we wrote it as a total joke. We wrote it on Writer's Retreat in Winston, Sam Burgess and Jake Rose, but I kept on listening to it and I'm like, this is like, I actually really like this because I like just, you know, stuff like that that's just insane. And so I hope that one can, I hope people like it enough for me to put it out. I think that'd be really fun live.
Yeah, that'd be great. Cooper, you're headlining the Ryman, sold out. The Cooper Allen Foundation, which focuses on mental health. What's the update with the foundation? You guys have raised like $400,000 to date. Is that right?
That was last year.
That was last year. That's so last year.
Yeah, it's old news, bro. But this year with the Ryman, like the Friday night, we're doing a big sponsor dinner for donors, raising money for the foundation. Saturdays, technically, you know, it's tied into the foundation. So all those donors get to then come to the Ryman. And this year we're doing veterans mental health, working with Brothers Keeper, a great organization here that helps veterans, you know, just deal with their mental health. And then working with Charlie Daniels Journey Home Foundation. Those are kind of our beneficiaries this year. And I think we're going to raise another around 400 this year to give to those guys. So it's that's like my favorite part of this whole thing. It's the coolest career thing I've gotten to do is this foundation stuff. And kudos to my parents who crush it and my wife who crushes it.
They kind of help run it?
Yeah, those three really kind of do, I call it all the work. And help when I can and try to put together stuff like the Ryman and whatnot to kind of tie into it.
So wait, so is there going to be a, from the Ryman, there's this dinner happening beforehand. Because the Ryman is like a great opportunity to kind of like raise awareness, raise some funds or whatever.
Yeah.
So you got this dinner beforehand, you're tying in a couple other organizations. Cooper Allen found it. Is that like when you start having success, does your management come to you and say, we got to do a foundation or something? You go, that's a great idea. Like when do you start, how big do you have to be to start a foundation?
I thought you had to be a lot bigger. Like I always, because me and my parents had always talked about it. I thought we had to be at least, you know, doing arenas or something before we could start a foundation that did anything. And then my mom called me. This was 2 years ago now. It was like, I've been praying about this, kind of had this calling of like, I don't think we should wait. I think this is always something you've wanted to do. So let's just start it. We'll start it at the ground level and see what happens. And that was before last year's event. So it really, it's been awesome. And I think it's proof that you can give back in a big way before you necessarily hit the big time.
So how'd you start it? What was the first thing?
Yeah, it was similar to what we're doing here. It was just in Charlotte. So we did a Riders Around that Friday night. It was me and Walker Hayes. And then played the Fillmore in Charlotte that night. And again, just, you know, had a lot of generous people, you know, donate to technically, you know, buy a ticket to come to this event. And we raised it for a place called Hopeway last year, which is a full-scale mental health facility in Charlotte that does a lot of great work for people of all ages, walks of life. And so that was a great, great first year. And then we kind of wanted to do something in Nashville this year. And I thought veterans-focused is just kind of what we were called to do this year. And so that kind of spurred that. And we'll just keep doing it next year and the year after and the year after that.
Do you feel like, I feel like if you look in the history of just Nashville or country music, sometimes you have these artists that are in like pockets of groups that come up together, like the outlaw movement or like whatever, like just 90s artists or whatever. They're like these groups of people. And I feel like people kind of think about the early pandemic artists that broke, like you and Priscilla Block and Ashley Cook and people, but you don't really feel, I guess none of them really feel like they go in the same group. Like you guys all feel like even though you're friends and whatever, you're all kind of doing your own thing. Do you feel like you're on your own out here or do you feel like you're part of a group of artists that have kind of come up together?
Yeah, I don't think, I've never felt alone in Nashville just because of how like collaborative it is.
But you have such a unique career, I feel like. I don't think anyone has the same path that you have.
Yeah, and I think everybody's path, especially starting with social media stuff, has been different and unique. And you know, those were kind of my first music friends outside of awesome people I played with on Broadway that still friends with to this day. But we just kind of all, when we started doing that 615 House stuff together, and kudos to Chris and Ashley for even coming up with that, we were all, while it was all different, everybody was different, we were all kind of doing the same like thing.
But I feel like all those people, and this has been discussed a lot, but I feel like all those people, which is great because a lot of them are having really big success, they all ended up going a pretty traditional route. And you have been the only one, especially with Alexandra Kay, who just signed a label deal, which is awesome. And I think everyone's having success. But you've been the only one that's kind of stuck to your guns and stayed independent. And you're having the same level, if not more, success than all of them. Priscilla just played the Ryman. You're about to play the Ryman. So how are you different? Do you think about that? But it's incredible. But like, what was your thing that kept you a little bit on a different path than everyone else?
Part of it was just how I am, I guess, and just how I liked kind of the independent stuff. But it was also kind of necessary because I did so much different stuff, like sonically. Like early on, you know, I didn't like have a sound, right? You didn't hear this and go, oh, that's, you know, a Cooper Allen song, because I liked experimenting with this type of Cooper Allen song, with that type of Cooper Allen song. And so it was a lot harder to put me in a box. And so I think it just naturally, between doing a lot of that stuff and just kind of how I like to work, just, you know, some of my preferences, I guess, it just kind of happened naturally. And it has never felt like we were like purposefully different or any of that stuff. It was just like I'm just kind of following my gut on a lot of this stuff, and a lot of the decisions we make. It just, if it feels right, you do it. If it doesn't feel right yet, you don't do it.
So is it almost hard to even put into words how you've had the same level of success independently and you go, well, we just kind of did our thing and now here we are? Or was there something specific that you had this idea about that you were like, I think we can do this on our own. Let's keep going. Like, maybe it's hard to even explain how it's worked out this way.
Yeah, I guess it was a combination of both. I can't even really explain it. It's just like this is a bad answer, but it's just kind of what we've done. And, you know, there were also, you know, there weren't label heads beating down my door or anything. It's not like I was, like, fending off the dogs coming at me. It just, this is kind of how it worked out. And I'm so thankful for how it worked out. I'm really thankful for how it worked out for them, for anybody that's done whatever their path is. It's like, at the end of the day, you got to do what's best for you, and there's 1 million great roads to take to get to, you know, the same place of having any sort of success in this business.
What is the biggest pressure you feel like? You're the boss of all this, right? You're playing the Ryman. You're not beholden to the label head or whatever. Maybe the pressure for other people is, I got to do a good show because I got to make the label happy and everyone's invested a lot of money in me. You're the top of the kingdom here. So what is the pressure like playing the Ryman this whole year? You've got to keep your guys on salary and employed and whatever. What is that like? Plus you're a dad, right? So is that just agonizing, or you go, you're chill. You're like, we got this. Year's on the calendar. We're good.
I mean,
or I'm just both.
I don't really get, I put a lot of pressure on myself just naturally, but it's really none of that really. I don't feel a whole lot of pressure with any of that stuff just because I've got so many good people around me, and my family is awesome, and my wife is awesome, and my team is awesome, and my friends are awesome, and my band is awesome. It's just all these people that, if you surround yourself with people that kind of have that same standard that you try to hold for yourself, they also hold themselves to it. They hold the group to it, whatever the final product is and whatever you're working on. As long as that's the case, then you almost just, it's like this kind of iron sharpening iron thing, and the standard just slowly rises, you know, as time goes on, and everybody just does it because that's how they're wired. So I don't know. I don't really feel a whole lot of pressure. I guess the pressure is, you know, putting on the best show for the fans that are there, and we've tried to do that every single show. We take it all super seriously, you know, every time we're out there. People paid money to see us, so the pressure, I guess, is putting on the best show for them.
That's what you got to do.
Come on.
Cooper Allen at the Ryman, sold out. Winston-Salem is out now. You got new music coming around the corner, or you put that album out, now you're good for a minute?
It won't be that long. It won't be that long.
You got to keep the music coming.
I know. I just,
that's what you do.
I like it too much.
You like it too much.
Yeah.
Dude, new kid on the way. You're incredible, man. You put on one of the most entertaining shows. Some people get up there and phone it in, and they just play guitar and don't do anything. You're like, I'm going to entertain.
Yeah, we got to get a workout up there.
You got to start adding pyro and things like that?
Pyro would be sick.
You need a little pyro, don't you think?
Yeah.
Like some Cairo jets or something.
If you can find me some pyro money, we'll be doing some pyro.
Come on, I can get you some pyro. You don't pull out some pyro at the Ryman?
You know, we did pyro once, and it was because it was set up for somebody else, and they were like, do y'all want to use this pyro?
You were like, yes!
And it was awesome.
Who's the weirdest dude on your team, weird in terms of just random responsibility that you wouldn't think about? Is there anyone that's, like, bizarre? You're like, I can't believe this person works for me.
We're pretty, like, slim in terms of, like, crew size, team size. Like, nobody really, everybody has a very, like, necessary
role,
yeah.
So your guy, your production manager, or someone was like creating a case for your piano back there.
He is unbelievable. Jack of all trades, bro. His name's Jack. Traits. So
unbelievable.
He's unbelievable, man.
Cooper Allen, dude, you're amazing.
You
headlining
are.
The Ryman, sold out. 23rd? Is it the 23rd? What's the date? 28th at the Ryman.
Yeah, baby.
Big deal. Where are you gonna play next? What's the goal?
We gotta go to the UK after the Ryman. So that'll be a
How are you going to get to arenas? Last question.
Good question.
How are you going to do it? You got to have a sense, right?
Keep building, bro.
If you keep building, are you going to get to arenas? Is that how it's going to work?
I'd hope so. Got to have that one song that really, like, really takes off.
You're kind of still trying to, you feel like you're trying to find that one song, that like your fancy-like moment or something. That's what's going to get you to arenas, right?
I think so.
How you get that song?
That's a great question.
I got the answer for you. I know how you're going to get.
Okay.
I don't know how you're going to get. You're on your own. I don't know how you find a hit song. That's
hard.
You feel like that's what we're searching for, right?
But that's what everybody's searching for, you know?
That's right, that's right.
But I work with a lot of good people, and God, you just got to keep trying.
All right.
And it'll happen.
It'll happen. Cooper Allen.
Thank you, brother.
Dude, thanks for letting us into your rehearsal space right here. This is the Cooper Allen Dojo.
Come on.
Rehearsing out of this
new
place
drum
all
bolt.
Week.
This thing is sick.
This thing makes you look at this, you go, I'm a real touring artist because I got a drum bolt, right?
I saw this for the first time on Monday. This is some real stuff.
That is real stuff.
And finally, my drummer, who is the man, can have his own vault. He deserves it.
He doesn't deserve anything. Come on.
He
deserves to just play the drums, and
he deserves that's a hell of a lot more than I do, I will say.
Wrapping up here with Cooper Allen. Don't forget to subscribe. We'll see you next time.
Yes,
Cooper,
sir.
Thanks for taking the time, man.
Much appreciated.
See you next time.